Hello and welcome to the Game Podcast from The Times. I'm Natalie Sawyer, and in the studio today it is Gregor Robertson, James Restall and Molly Hudson. Hello, everyone.
Hello.
How's everyone doing?
Very well, thank you.
Yeah, good. James, you well?
Yeah, very good. Very good after a brilliant night of Champions League football.
Oh, wonderful. We'll get onto that in just a moment. Molly, you good?
Yeah, not too bad, thank you.
Fantastic. Well, coming up, we are going to look ahead to this weekend's League Cup final at Wembley, talk premium economy and private jets, and find out what happened when the Times' very own Tony Cascarino met the rock and roll legend John Bon Jovi. All that to come after this.
VoiceOver describes what's happening on your iPhone screen.
VoiceOver on. Settings.
So you can navigate it just by listening.
Books. Contacts. Calendar. Double tap to open. Breakfast with Anna from 10 to 11.
And get on with your day. Accessibility. There's more to iPhone.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
So there is only one place to start, and that is Manchester City coming from behind at the Bernabeu in seven dramatic minutes, followed by a red card for Sergio Ramos. It means that City will have a 2-1 lead over Real Madrid when the teams meet again in Manchester on the 17th of March for a place in the last eight of the Champions League. Gregor, everyone's talking so positively about Manchester City. Optimism is very high that they'll get through to the next stage. Is it job done?
Not quite, but I think the way that Real Madrid played and the sort of the bluntness of their attack and whatnot, I think it's certainly almost done. I think Manchester City, you know, when the team sheets came in, our jaws slackened and we're thinking, what is Guardiola doing here again? Kind of overthinking things. Well, he's been accused of that. I mean, I don't know how anyone can really accuse Pep Guardiola of much, to be honest. He's one of the foremost coaches in the world, obviously. But we were kind of thinking, what is he doing here? And then it worked. It was just every kind of little nuance of the system he tried to employ, it worked. And Real Madrid really didn't know which way to turn. They didn't really know how to break Manchester City down. Manchester City are not used to playing quite as defensively and, you know, quite as pragmatically. But I think the fact that he was willing to do that shows kind of the amount of thought he's put into European competition this season, because it's the kind of one and only thing, the biggest draw for them now.
They played like they had a point to prove.
Absolutely, yeah.
And it was interesting because Rodri was speaking after the game, and he was saying that in every game they've gone behind this season, they've not come back to win. Mm-hmm. And they felt that there was a real feeling of, we need to have a bit more backbone here. We need to go out and we need to kind of learn how to overcome adversity. And given everything that's happened off the field, this looked like a real defiant show to UEFA as much as the rest of Europe.
Yeah, no, it certainly did. And I think I was reading beforehand how Pep Guardiola had said they were going to use a lot of the refereeing decisions that had gone against them in the past as sort of fuel the fire in their bellies going into that game at the Bernabeu. But interesting what you mentioned there about the tactics and the team selection that Guardiola employed. There was no Sterling in the starting 11, nor was there Sergio Aguero. Gabriel Jesus was deployed on the wing. Bernardo Silva started a false number 9. Kevin De Bruyne was just here, there and everywhere. It kind of fooled everybody, as you've alluded to already. So does that mean Guardiola is back to being the best tactician in Europe? Or I suppose in some ways he's never lost it, but...
No. I think that's the thing. I think we easily kind of jump on to, if it doesn't work for him, he's a bald fraud. And he was even asked afterwards, you know, he must be so pleased with how it, and he said, well, yeah, because it worked. But the thing that amazes me is his kind of bravery as well, because, like, he doesn't care one jot what people think about how he's going to approach the game. Even though he's been accused of all this in the past about potentially overthinking things and Manchester City having struggled in the kind of knockout stages, he just took a team sheet and then threw it way out in left field, and it could easily have kind of failed. But you know, he said he worked for kind of 10 days over the last 10 days on this, and sort of analysing that Aguero or Jesus through the middle would have had no change out of Ramos or Varane. They needed to be solid on the flanks, and the way that, you know, the shift he got out of Jesus on the left was remarkable. And De Bruyne is, we know how good De Bruyne is.
We've seen in the Premier League, he tends to use Jesus up front away from home, kind of winning those balls high up the pitch, putting defenders under pressure. This was just a slightly different version of that. He was playing, watching the first 15 minutes of that match, and he's playing almost exclusively as a left wing back. He's alongside Mendy at some point. And in those early exchanges, Mendy, if anyone, was the player getting further forward. It was an absolute stroke of genius, and one which I confess I didn't think would work. And when the goal went in, even though City had largely been on top when Real Madrid scored, I sort of thought, this is a real shame if they lose this, because the narrative will be, oh, Pep's done it again. He's gone out there, he's tinkered, he's made an unnecessary sort of curveball lineup, when actually the game plan was near flawless.
And losing Laporte as well early on, they need him back as well, I think. You know, the competition's open, it's wide open this year. If they get through this, I think 10 out of the last 16 of the clubs have changed a manager in the last 12 months. That shows how much kind of flux there is in Europe at the moment, and there's not one team that that's kind of a standout. You think they're going to win. Liverpool and Man City, I would say, are kind of looking like the two most dangerous teams.
And even Liverpool have lost to Napoli in the group stage. Obviously lost the round of 16 game against Atletico. They look more vulnerable in Europe than at all in the Premier League.
Yeah.
So you can't, there's just no givens this year.
That said, with Laporte going off injured, which is obviously going to be a big blow, it was great they had Fernandinho on the bench, who actually came in and was brilliant, really, at times.
Yeah, but I mean, at the same time, Otamendi, again, rushing out, getting in a muddle with Rodri. I think the two of them, Rodri in the first half and Mendy, in fact, although, you know, for all the way the system worked, Mendy was giving the ball away, flying into tackles, got booked. So there are still weaknesses in that team, and they really do need to pray and get everything crossed that Laporte will be back fit soon.
Well, I mean, I look back to last year, and I mean, if you look at all of Manchester City's knockout ties under Guardiola, there was the crazy Monaco one, there was the Liverpool one where they were blown away, and then last season against Spurs, they had a very disciplined, professional 1-0 win in the first leg, and then kind of all hell broke loose in the second leg. The challenge here, I mean, it's tempting to think City actually could lose that second leg 1-0 and they'll be through. But that thinking can't happen, and they can't equally try and, I don't think they can afford to try and put the tie to bed by being too attacking. I think they've just got to do a number on Real Madrid again.
Is the job made easier then, Gregor, with the fact that Sergio Ramos is suspended?
I mean, absolutely. He's huge for them. But equally, as I said, I think up front they're really, Benzema had a header that Ederson saved. I think any time that they got through, it was because of an error because of Manchester City. I don't really see the kind of same craft and guile that you sort of associate with Real Madrid. Modric, I think he looked fairly pedestrian for Modric. And they're not, you know, they're not the same. They're not the Galacticos of yesteryear. They've signed a lot of young players who have got kind of improvements to be made.
It's quite concerning how they tired after sort of 75 minutes. That the midfield is undoubted class in it, but they just didn't have the legs after 75 minutes. And then, you know, bring on Raheem Sterling, and there's a brilliant thing I saw this morning showing kind of a graph of the chances between the two teams, and it was neck and neck until 75 minutes, and then it just shoots up for Manchester City once Sterling's on. But going back, looking at the second leg, why not start Gareth Bale?
Well, yeah, I mean, if you're watching the game, and Steve McManaman never shut up about that for the first half. But look, yeah, Gareth Bale is someone. That's why you can't say it's over. Gareth Bale could conjure something up. He won the Champions League final for them almost single-handedly not so long ago. So this is still Real Madrid.
If out of favour Fernando Llorente can kill off Man City last season, Gareth Bale can do it this time.
We'll see.
But just something I wanted to pick up on what you said, Gregor, and bring in Molly into this conversation about the intimidating factor. How have a side like Real Madrid, you think, lost that? They used to have all these Galacticos, as you mentioned, and don't get me wrong, there's still some incredible players within that in that Real Madrid side. But do you feel as though when you club in someone like Real Madrid, AC Milan, maybe Juventus, maybe even Inter Milan, although they're on the rise again, that across the board in Europe, it's a bit more level?
I think you look back at, like, literally just last season's Champions League and you see what happened in the space of 90 minutes. It was just bonkers. It didn't matter who you were. It didn't matter that you were Barcelona with Messi. It can happen to anyone. Mm. So I think any sort of... And actually, to be honest, Real Madrid haven't been that dominant in La Liga either, so it's not as though they're going into it like Liverpool have from their own domestic league. But I just think the Champions League, we've seen it so many times, it can throw up so many scenarios and it is so different. You know, as James said, Liverpool have looked a lot different playing in the Champions League than they have in the Premier League. If they could play the same way they did in the Premier League, they probably wouldn't have lost to Napoli or Atletico Madrid. So I think the Champions League is almost like this unique kind of melting pot of all of the leagues coming together, and it makes some really interesting games that are so entertaining for the viewer.
I think we have to mention Bayern, though. I mean, yeah. I've been talking about that Bayern are the one team we've been kind of rejuvenated since changing the manager in November. Leipzig as well look are in a very strong position against Spurs. But it's undoubtedly true that you look at Juventus, who lost to Lyon, and they are certainly not thriving under Sarri. Lyon are 7th in Liga. Valencia are 8th. So the teams aren't in a great position, a lot of them, so it's wide open this year.
It is. Before we finish up talking about the Champions League as such or Manchester City, let's give a special mention to Kevin De Bruyne, who is playing in that strange-looking midfield, but he had a goal and an assist, and on average, he was their furthest player going forward. Is he the best midfielder in Europe right now, James?
I think he has to be. His numbers are sensational. I think last night was assist number 18 for the season, which is certainly more in all competitions than any player in the Premier League. He just what shows his class is that he can be deployed in a position like that, where he was effectively positionally a number 10, but drifting around in a way that it made him impossible to mark. And you look at his touch map, he pops up on the left, he pops up on the right, but almost every touch
sounds like a football song, that.
Sorry,
one
for the Euros.
Maxine Elias.
maybe I've just written Belgium's Euro 2020 song. But no, he was everywhere in the Real Madrid half. They couldn't pick him up. I think 60% of his passes forward and in dangerous positions. He's in peak form, and if Manchester City are going to go on and win the Champions League, he will have a huge part to play in that.
Gregor, anyone better than De Bruyne that you can think of?
Not for a kind of all rounder, and it's his drive as well. He just drives the team on. Again, like I said, Mendy had a really tough first half, and he was on him. He was berating him. He was, you know, he raises the standards of him around him. He very rarely dips below his kind of almost his peak. It's also astonishing that there's players like Sterling, Jesus, David Silva, even like players over the year, Kyle Walker, even have all been linked with Real Madrid, and he. That's never really been... De Bruyne seems to be settled and happy there. I think... I'm surprised that he's not someone that the very best clubs in the world are really pushing hard to get, because he's certainly one of the best midfielders in the world.
Hmm. Molly, would you agree?
You also think about how many injuries he's had in recent seasons as well, that he's come back from all that and is just as good, if not better, than he ever was, which has proved difficult. And I think, it's interesting because you look at other midfielders, you even look at somebody like Jordan Henderson that's become such a pivotal part of that Liverpool midfield. But with De Bruyne, it doesn't matter how Man City play. He always seems to play well. Like, it's pretty hard to think of a bad game that De Bruyne has ever really had, regardless of, you know, how City are getting on, even in the Premier League. He still looks just like a class above, I think.
Mm. Well, it was a great night for City in Madrid. They do come away with that win. It isn't job done yet, though, but if they do get past Real, how far do you think they can go in this Champions League, James?
All depends on the draw. I know that's a bit of a sitting on the fence answer, but it does all depend on the draw. Their big Achilles heel has been when they've faced English clubs. And if Liverpool get through and they draw Liverpool, then I'd probably be on Liverpool's side on that one in terms of who's going to win it. But I don't think, and I've said before on this podcast, that I don't think their defence necessarily will stand up to the scrutiny of the later knockout stages.
Imagine them against Dortmund.
It was the near complete performance last night, but for individual errors, and that is what will cost you at this level.
That's been their Achilles heel in the Premier League as well. I think, as I said already, I think Laporte, if he's not fit, then it's a huge, huge blow for them. But as I said as well, I think Bayern looked formidable against Chelsea, and Liverpool have got a tough task to get past Atletico. So I agree with James. I think that's a kind of, they're almost a bogey team. I think of all the teams, they would be the team they would least like to play. Even we've spoken about how there's not many clubs are in a great state of health across Europe. Barcelona are another one. I think Liverpool are the team they want to avoid.
All right, next up for City, it is a trip to Wembley on Sunday for the League Cup final against Aston Villa. But ahead of the game, the Villa boss Dean Smith has what could be a tricky conundrum. Should he play his strongest team against City and prioritise a League Cup win over their perilous league position? They sit fourth bottom of the table, but could be in the relegation zone by the time they play their next Premier League game at Leicester on Monday the 9th of March. So first up, Molly, if you're Dean Smith, are you playing your full strength team against City?
Yeah, I think so. I think for me, regardless of the fact that they probably won't win anyway because they're playing Manchester City, if they do win and they play their full strength team, then that can only push them on in the league for me. Like that's such positive momentum. Mm. If they're going to lose, they're going to lose anyway, regardless of what team they put out. And, you know, whether they lose or not, how much impact does that have on whether they go down? I don't know, but I think if they can win, which means they'd need to play their strongest team, then yeah, I think it can only help them kind of stay up. It could be a win-win.
Mm. It's an interesting one, isn't it? Because everyone is automatically assuming Manchester City are going to win this League Cup final. There have been the odd upsets in time, in other cup finals as well, when you think about Wigan. Are you writing off Villa's chances, James?
If Villa play a weakened team in that final, then we might as well just pack up, do away with the League Cup, and really it's just a sorry reflection of the state of our top flight football and the priorities of our football. If you're a Villa player, do you want to, when you're talking to your grandkids in 50 years' time, do you want to say, I won the League Cup, this is my League Cup medal, or have a look at this book of league tables. Look, we finished 16th in 2020. We finished 15th in 2021. I think they've got to go for it. And I mean, funnily enough, the first football match I ever watched live was a playoff final between Scunthorpe and Leighton Orient at Wembley, and Dean Smith was in the Leighton Orient team. Mm. And they lost 1-0. Orient lost 1-0 that day. Dean Smith's had many happier times at Wembley with the playoffs last year, but imagine what it'd be like for him as a manager to have to be there in the Royal Box lifting the League Cup.
Yeah,
I mean, absolutely. it's amazing. And so I just really hope that, you know, we see the best Villa can put out there. And yeah, I think they can. You know, why not? You know, in a one-off game, anything can happen. Obviously, Manchester City are huge favourites, but you know, it's every chance they could win 6-0 like they did against Watford in the FA Cup final. I think they have beaten Villa 6-1 this season. So, you know, odds are against Villa, but come on.
Well, the thing is, I mean, let's not forget Dean Smith. Obviously, he knows about the precarious situation that they're in the Premier League. He's the Villa manager. He's a Villa fan as well. Let's not forget. So, surely he'll want to put out his strongest team.
Of course, yeah. I mean, look, it's 24 years since they won a trophy, League Cup, in 96. They've been in a couple of finals since then, maybe in three. Mm. But no one remembers them. You know, not really. I think they were hammered by Arsenal in one of them. Mm. So to win a trophy, it's one of these things that over time, perspective changes, undoubtedly. I think if you were to ask the players, you know, it's like you can win the final or you can stay up, they probably would stay up. Mm-hmm. They would say stay up. But that part of that is about securing huge wages in the Premier League. But when they're retired and they look back, and as James says, having a medal and memories is far more important than a couple of years in the Premier League. And
having an empty medal cabinet.
And how long do you stay at one club either? So you could, you know. They need to, there's no doubt, if you were to ask the club, most people at the club, they would say, we want to stay up. But part of that is because, just for the long-term kind of financial health of the club, to keep someone like Jack Grealish and others. But when they look back, if they were to look back in years to come, I think that would change.
The thing is as well, is this competition, because teams play such weakened teams in the early rounds, I think for Premier League teams, anyone in the Premier League can legitimately get to this final. So I take your point. If Villa, you know, Villa do prioritise staying in the Premier League, there's every chance they could do this again. It's not like this is a once in a lifetime chance, I don't think. I mean, obviously you'd want to win it this time. Of course you would. And you look at watching a Wigan game recently on Sky, and the sort of pre-match footage shows the big statue of Dave Whelan with the FA Cup.
Yeah,
you know, what people will remember.
Mm. Same with Birmingham as well. Birmingham won the League Cup and went down the same season. And if you ask their fans now whether to swap a few more years in the Premier League or have the memories of that day at Wembley, then it's a no-brainer.
And it's not just winning a cup; it's beating the great Manchester City and winning the cup. And it's club folklore territory.
So, with that in mind, let's say they do pull off a bit of a shock and they win the League Cup, but ultimately their season ends in relegation. Would it still be a relatively successful season for them, Molly?
I think a bit like the lads were saying, I think it depends on the perspective you look at it from. I think, as Gregor mentioned there about Grealish, you think about the idea of Villa staying up and Grealish staying, chances are he's probably going to go anyway, because he's the kind of player that's good enough to probably play Champions League football, or at least European football. So would it not be kind of nice for them to win a trophy? Grealish, you know, let's be honest, if they do beat Manchester City, Grealish is probably going to have a great game and be a big part of that. For him to win that trophy with the club and then leave, then for them to lose the League Cup, get 16th in the Premier League, and then he goes anyway.
Hmm. Okay, I see what you're saying. But what about you, James? Do you think that if they were to win the League Cup but were ultimately relegated, that we could still look at that positively?
Well, Aston Villa fans would be able to look forward to getting their passports out for July for some early Europa League qualifiers.
Whilst also looking forward to a really hectic championship season.
Exactly. I mean, it wouldn't be ideal. And I think
Grealish would get to play European football.
Yeah,
there
well,
you go.
Well, there you go. Yeah, yeah.
He gets
his
wish.
Yeah, I think it is a case of perspective, but I still think it would be a successful season. Because winning a trophy and beating Manchester City is something that so many teams have tried and failed to do.
Gregor, do you think a team should ever prioritise a cup run over league safety?
I think. Those days are long gone. I think, you know, we all know that the Premier League is the be-all and end-all. But, and if you get relegated, there's no way you can call it a successful season. That's the truth of the matter, to be honest.
Sorry, there you James. Go, you went straight for it.
I mean, it's not the same, but I played in a EFL trophy final at Wembley in the year I got relegated. And the day out at Wembley with kind of 50, 60,000 fans there, is something that you remember forever. And the relegation, you can win another promotion. So it is
Did you win the EFL trophy?
We did, yeah. Ah. So that's, you know, as I said, I think your perspective changes when you finish playing. It's like you look back and you think, and the memories and the medal and something to cherish is really important. But any time you're relegated, it feels like a massive failure and a massive step backwards kind of in your career and in the future.
Were you in the relegation zone when the final was played?
Yeah.
And was it and clearly wasn't a distraction for you on the day? Was it? Was it? Did you feel like it was kind of a welcome escape from
absolutely,
the league?
Yeah,
or?
Absolutely. You kind of.
Who was your manager at the time?
John Sheridan. I was at Chesterfield at the time. Mm-hmm. And he'd been either a few kind of trips to Wembley with Sheffield Wednesday. Really good player. And it was like a weekend away in London. We kind of, you know, you go and spend a few days in a hotel in London. It was like a little break, and then you had a brilliant day. Obviously, because we won it, it was fantastic.
Did you play Southend?
And then you're back to, yeah, we did, yeah. Southend. Yeah, good memory.
Well, no. I was cheering you on that day because they beat us in the semi.
Did you play a full strength team?
Of course.
There you go.
VoiceOver describes what's happening on your iPhone screen.
VoiceOver on, settings.
So you can navigate it just by listening.
Books, contacts, calendar, double tap to open. Breakfast with Anna from 10 to 11.
And get on with your day. Accessibility, there's more to iPhone.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much. But when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, to get 30, to get 20, 20, 20, to get 20, 20, to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Right, still to come, we're going to find out what happened when the Times' Tony Cascarino met rock royalty in Jon Bon Jovi. But now, Molly, tell us about this exclusive story that you've had in the Times today about England women's team and their trip to America for the She Believes Cup.
So they, obviously, we've also got a Women's League Cup final this weekend. So that's on Saturday, Chelsea against Arsenal. That's up in Nottingham at the City Grounds. So there's a fair few players in there that will be heading off to the She Believes Cup with England.
Right.
They're heading straight to Gatwick after that game because it's a 5:30 kickoff. And that's where England are taking off from on Sunday afternoon. But they will be flying in premium economy.
So on a commercial flight?
Yes, because the She Believes Cup is like a little friendly tournament that is held every year in America. But this time around, it was pretty difficult for the US organisers to schedule a sort of fourth team. So it was always going to be the US, England and Japan. But last year it was Brazil, and they're involved in Olympic qualification this year. And obviously lots of teams are involved in Euro 2021 qualification as well. So, and obviously England have qualified for both of those already. So they eventually found Spain as the fourth team. So that just sort of delayed the announcement. So usually it's just before Christmas. This time it wasn't until the 13th of January. And we understand that by that time, there was no business class flights that could have housed the entire squad. So they would have had to be split onto two different business class flights. That was the other option than going premium economy. Phil Neville and the players decided that they'd rather go premium economy and all be together, which is completely understandable because it does seem a bit odd to be split up. But of course, the problem that a lot of people have with it and that I have with it is this wouldn't have been a choice that you had to make if it was men's football, because they would have just chartered a flight. The players and Phil wouldn't have been put into that position.
So was that, do we know if that was considered?
I think because of the difference in income that the England national teams make and the interest that the FA don't really see that as an option, which is a bit strange because they did get a private flight back from the World Cup in the summer where they finished fourth.
Yeah, and you mentioned, obviously, the She Believes Cup is a friendly tournament, but a lot of emphasis is put on that by England. They are the holders. So it is surprising in some ways that the FA haven't thought we maybe should at least fly them out in a on a nice plane. And this isn't necessarily about flying premium economy. Nothing wrong with flying premium economy, but it's that equality issue, I suppose, that we're coming down to here. And James, with the FA trying, it seems, to push the women's game, especially after the World Cup, they try to invest more money and put more emphasis on the women's game. This seems to be going against what they've been driving for.
Yeah, it does seem strange that a flight wasn't chartered. There was a bit of a furore, I think, during the World Cup when it emerged that I think there was a chartered flight for the under-21s and not a chartered flight for the women's team going out to the World Cup. It does seem strange that given what had happened before that this sort of wasn't, you know, they didn't put into place a chartered flight.
Mm. And Molly, this has happened before, and Phil Neville's not been happy about doing this before.
No, so in Phil's first She Believes Cup tournament, which is in 2018, he has had a bit of a moan at the scheduling before, and it is a valid argument because obviously it's the US's home tournament, so they're always going to prioritise what's best for them. And I think last time, not only did England fly economy in 2018, but they also had a change. It was just really difficult to get to where they was trying to get to. And he did kind of admit that it made a big difference to their preparation compared to obviously what the US had, who didn't have to have any of that. But it's interesting because Phil has also said, and as I wrote in the article, is that he's quite relaxed about it because he thinks that the players should have to earn everything they get. But at the same time, I think that's a bit of a weird viewpoint because he would have himself always, I can only assume, at Manchester United and England, would have probably never had to be in this position as a player. Yeah. But I do kind of get what he's saying. You don't just want it to be a token gesture. But they are all professional women's players now. They're all representing England. You know, thousands of people are watching, millions are watching on TV.
Yeah.
So it's not like it's a token gesture now.
It just feels, Gregor, like a bit of double standards here.
Yeah, it's the easiest kind of own goal to avoid, I think, as well.
Yeah.
And it seems it sounds like it's about systems as well. You know, when it comes to booking the flights or travel or accommodation or anything for the men's England team, they will look to do it in luxury and the greatest comfort. And that doesn't seem to be the kind of reaction, the instant sort of direction that the FA turned to with the women's team still. I'm sure that will happen in time, but it shouldn't be taking this long for that to happen, especially because it's happened in the past.
Mm. And flying, I don't know, what, 7-8 hours as it will be, on a commercial plane, I can't quite get my head around as well because, you know, you want your players to rest, you want your players to not really be distracted by other things, but you may get people coming up to them and bothering them on the flight, which is not normal, is it, in a preparation for some sort of friendly tournament or tournament?
No, and I think, you know, I would hazard a guess that some people listen to this will think, oh, you know, poor them, they're having to fly in economy class. But it's not about flying in the lap of luxury. It's, as you say, it's about just having the right preparation. Mm. And as you say, if people are coming up and asking for autographs and things like that during a flight, then that's perhaps not the best form of preparation.
You'd hope that they have they find a way to sort of give them a section of the
they've got their nice little curtain probably.
I mean, James, I don't know what you're hoping for, but it'll just be a curtain that people can just pull back. But I mean, and the good thing is, I'm sure that all the women team would be receptive to all of that because they're very down to earth individuals.
Well, the sad thing is they're pretty used to it.
Yes.
It's not like they've been jetting around the world on private planes all the time. So, but that's kind of the sad thing that, you know, players like Steph Horton and Jill Scott, that when they began their careers, you know, 20 years ago, 15 years ago maybe, were kind of bringing their own food to training and jetting up and down motorways and trying to get to training, balancing it with a job. Actually, now they've deserved to be full-time professional footballers and they deserve the rewards that come with that as well.
Gregor, did you always travel, as you do now, of course, in the business and first-class luxury that you now are afforded?
No, I mean, like it does bring to mind a pre-season trip to America with Forrest many moons ago, when something similar happened in that I think they only booked kind of eight business class seats, and the manager and the coaching staff and like three of the most senior professionals did it. And they kept coming back with the kind of big sandwiches and all the food that was laid on. We were sitting there all cramped and kind of, but we had a laugh about it. But this is different, you know. I think that was I don't know, Nottingham Forest aren't England.
Yeah.
And this is also kind of 15, 20 years ago now. So I think it was the easiest own goal to avoid, really. I've travelled in chartered flights with Scotland. When I was with the under-21s, we used to often mirror the fixtures of the senior team, so we travelled with the senior team. And as I say, it's not necessarily what you would envisage as kind of feet back in the lap of luxury. It just means you're contained and on your own, and you're not being bothered, and you're just with your teammates rather than with all the rest of the public as well. So, yeah, big own goal.
Yeah, not good from the FA. Now, how is this for a meeting of minds? The Times' Tony Cascarino met rock royalty in John Bon Jovi. On the Times Online, you can read what happened when Cass met JBJ, which included Bon Jovi claiming that Bayern Munich squad was sipping whiskey in their London hotel bar the night before they put Chelsea to the sword at Stamford Bridge. And Bon Jovi sent a good luck message to the out-of-form lead striker Patrick Bamford, who is a massive fan of the rock legend. But I'd be intrigued to know, as a result of this bizarre interview with Cass and John Bon Jovi, what is the most bizarre interview you've ever done? James, got one for us?
I'd like to take you back to my student days.
This is what I was going to do. Student days are not a good...
I was one of two sports editors on my student newspaper, myself and a guy called Sonak, and... The Oxford Union used to get, they get Premier League footballers come up and speak and do addresses, and occasionally the student newspapers get the chance to interview them. And there was one, it was during AVB's ill-fated spell, I think it was getting towards the end of that, and I think it was in between the two Napoli games where AVB got sacked and Roberto Di Matteo stroke John Terry managed the team to victory after that. And Gianfranco Zola was up. And so everyone wanted to ask him about Chelsea and what he thought of the situation there. And we were promised some interview time with him. He did the talk. It was all good. It was all fine. We weren't allowed in. We couldn't get into the room, first of all, because there were so many people that were there. And we were panicking, thinking, we're not going to get there. We promised our editors this big spread interview with Zola. Got to the end. They ended the talk. And so they said, well, you've got from the moment he leaves the room to his car, which is parked 5 minutes away, you can do the interview then. So we did this bizarre walk and talk interview with Gianfranco Zola down sort of Oxford High Street and sort of through to a public car park, in which we managed to get 2,000 words out of in the end, and he was very surprised that my colleague Sonak at the time seemed to know all about his fishing trip with Tino Asprilla.
Research. Okay, I like that. Bizarre interview, walking along the roads of Oxford. Molly, got one for us?
Yeah,
student union day.
Yeah, well, actually, it was a little even before that when I was a college student. Throwing back to the time when I didn't specialise in sport. And obviously had all the fun jobs, like talking about planes and fun stuff like that.
Living the dream, yeah. Molly.
So back in the day, for those listening to this podcast that don't work in the industry, there's something called a Vox Pop, which is like the most hated thing ever, where my college tutor used to say it was like going out to talk to the great unwashed on the street.
We sound like lovely clothes,
don't
we? Wow. So... it didn't give us a great impression of it before we started. Went out into Peterborough High Street, chucking it down with rain, freezing cold, doing like the most dull story about how you couldn't cycle down this road. It was like the main high street and you wasn't allowed to cycle down it. You had to get off your bike and walk and then get back on. And then you got like fined for this, and there was a big crackdown from like Peterborough police because, you know, got loads of time to do this sort of thing. And as we were filming, it was like video and audio as well. And as we were filming, somebody did that exact thing we got them on tape, and then that turned into a story in itself for like the local paper. But it was just the dullest thing ever that then turned into like writing more about dull things because this person had just done exactly what we were looking for on camera.
Is that what led you to go, I need to go into sport?
Yeah. Needed to do a sports degree at the end of that one. Yeah. No more vox pops.
Isn't that bizarre? At least you didn't go to university when I went to university where you recorded vox pops on reels, and I'm talking about a really old machine that then you had to splice. Not that anyone uses that anymore, and you didn't even use it really at the time, but they just wanted us to learn how to do it. Really irrelevant it was. But anyway, I digress. Gregor?
During the journeyman column, I've been to some pretty weird and wonderful places, but Glenn Tamplin, the owner, motivational mastermind slash manager extraordinaire, he takes the biscuit by a country mile, is... His office was called the Lion's Den, and there was kind of murals on every single wall. A lot of blood.
Oh.
Like lions attacking wildebeests, eagles swooping down on their prey.
Oh.
It was pretty graphic stuff. And then in the tunnel, it's like an aquarium. There was women sharks on the wall and all sorts. This is all supposedly just to kind of get in people's minds. If, for anyone who doesn't know him, Glenn Tamplin took over Billericay, put in a lot of money. Promised to get them to the Football League, signed Jermaine Pennant, Jamie O'Hara, Paul Konchesky, among others. I think the wage bill was about £25,000 a week at one point. This is in the National League South, or even the league below that initially. And he's since upped and left, and he's trying to do the same thing and now at Romford. So he was a character. It's one of those things where the interview, when you transcribe it afterwards, it's so hard to know what to put into the article because you don't want to feel like you're taking the piss a bit too much. And he kind of, yeah. If you don't know Glenn Tamplin, look him up.
Wow, he's a character. I wonder, so that was at Billericay where they had the tunnel, everything painted as an aquarium.
Yes.
Is that still the same? Does anyone know?
I would imagine so, because he's kind of left him in the lurch a bit.
Has he
now,
recreated it as his new club? That's what we want to know. That's the next journeyman column. Go to the new...
Well, it wouldn't be the Lion's Den though. Maybe he's got to come up with something else, like Jurassic Park or something. Loads of dinosaurs.
Well, I think they're the Wizards now.
He changed the name to
Wizards, the Romford Wizards. Yeah, he's a character.
I'm not sure that a Harry Potter mural though will be as good as Lions though. But anyway, do I need to do mine? Okay, sorry. Right, I'm just getting confirmation from our producer Max that I should tell you my bizarrest interview, which was when I was working in TV. I was in sport TV. I was asked to do a link up between, I was working for Sky Sports and Sky Movies, and it was during the Manchester United against Arsenal game. So I'm talking about quite a few years ago. They wanted to do this big thing where we did like an interview with a celebrity, and I had to go down to Leicester Square and be at the premiere of Tomorrowland. I think that was the name of the film. George Clooney was in it. So I had to stand on stage and interview him for 5 minutes or so. But it wasn't live. It wasn't as live. So you're pretending it's live, but you're allowed to call it live if you do it within a certain period of time. So anyway, we go to record the first interview with these big sweeping camera coming along the red carpet up to us on the stage. I begin my interview with George Clooney. And we have to start that again. I'm really sorry, we've got to start again. We had some technical issue. Okay, so we start that again. And then again, the sweeping camera comes along. I start my interview with George Clooney. He's chatting away. And then I have to stop him again. I'm so sorry, George. There was a graphic issue. We've got to start again. This probably happens 3 or 4 times. By the end of it, by the time we actually get through the interview, George is pretty much aware of all the questions. He answers it very robotically. Lovely man and all, but it was just like, this is too bizarre and very odd. And I never anticipated I'd be interviewing a Hollywood star when I worked in sports television. So anyway, that's my bizarre.
Got to spend a bit more time with George Clooney, at least.
That's true. That's true. I didn't want to tell him that was me deliberately making mistakes. But anyway, no. Lastly then, if you could interview one person, dead or alive, who would it be, do you think, and why? James?
I would love to have interviewed or met Brian Clough. Particularly now when you see the likes of Jose Mourinho and Pep Guardiola, and I sort of feel a lot of them are kind of fashioned in Cloughy's image in some way. I feel without Cloughy's personality, we wouldn't have the kind of modern managers that we have now. And I've always been fascinated, you know, the Damned United, loved that film, and also watched a lot of old, like, big match footage from ITV in the 70s, and he's sort of an early pundit as well. And I just think it would have been fascinating to spend an hour in his company and his views on the game.
Yeah, very forthright he was, wasn't he? You sort of winced at that moment. Is that because that was the same person for you, Gregor?
Well, yeah.
I'm really sorry.
That's all right. I met him once, actually a couple of times when I was at Forest, and you know, he's so revered there. It's kind of, he would walk down the hallway at the club and everyone would just stand to attention, kind of part like the Red Sea, stand against the wall and just kind of let him walk down the middle. He was so loved at Nottingham Forest, and he was, you know, he was kind of, he wasn't in great health at that point in time, so I would have loved to have interviewed him too. I think my biggest idol as a child was Henrik Larsson, the Celtic striker. So I think I would probably pick him, and that still might happen one day, you never know.
Let's make that happen.
That would be amazing. Molly?
It's kind of specific, but I think I'd like to go back in time to the 2012 Champions League final and interview Drogba after scoring the winning penalty, just because there was so much sort of like magic on that night, and it was like the script was written. And that was one of the reasons that I fell in love with sports journalism, was the idea of like reporting on those moments that you look back on now. So, like, as great as it'd be to interview him now, I'd prefer to interview him like back
fresh
then, if that
off
makes sense.
Pitch.
Yeah.
That raw emotion that you'd like to get. I mean, you added time travel into this. I never mentioned time travel, but that's absolutely fine. And for the record, I see where you're going with Brian Clough. Similarly, I would like to interview Bobby Robson. So Bobby, what a gentleman. I think he would have been amazing to speak to and would have had some fascinating stories. But that is it for now. Many thanks to our guests today, James Restall and Molly Hudson.
Remember, you can subscribe to The Times and The Sunday Times to enjoy award-winning journalism online or on your smartphone or tablet.
It is just £1 a week for an 8-week trial. Search The Times subscription for more information, and we'll be back on Monday, so you enjoy your weekend.
The Game is brought to you by The Times. For more information and more podcasts from The Times, head to thetimes.co.uk.
VoiceOver describes what's happening on your iPhone screen.
VoiceOver on, settings.
So you can navigate it just by listening.
Books, contacts, calendar, double tap to open. Breakfast with Anna from 10 to 11.
And get on with your day. Accessibility. There's more to iPhone.
I'm Manveen Rana from The Story, a daily news podcast from The Times. Join me and my co-host Luke Jones for a deep dive into the big stories and investigations. Plus, each month, William Hague hosts an agenda-setting interview with a key newsmaker or big thinker. That's The Story, The Times' daily podcast that brings you one remarkable story told in depth. Listen every weekday on the Times Radio app or wherever you get your podcasts.